Okay, so the topic of this month is, are you tired of not having enough months at the end of the money? Hello and welcome to another teleseminar produced by Member Solutions. I'm always honored to be on the phone with you each and every month, and I thank those of you who listen to me regularly. Most importantly, I'm happy that many of you have emailed me, called me, letting me know when the emails that I write weekly or the teleseminars that we provide monthly or the articles that we send out hit home. I'm proud that I can be of help and somehow elevate the martial art business to another level. Today's topic came up during one of my one-on-one elite consulting seminars. And very often when I do personal coaching for school owners, business owners, as well as life coaching, I'm able to use a person's specific situation to benefit others. Ideas that would have not normally come up in everyday life are brought to the forefront, and I'm able to take that issue or concern, and I turn that into a lesson for the masses. In this case, I'm sure if you listen closely, this will be a seminar that's totally life-changing. I know I say that at most of my seminars, but I really do believe that if one bit of information that you get that will benefit your school will change your life forever. So let's get started. I need to ask you, what do you think is the most commonly asked question of me when I do one-on-one consulting calls? You probably can figure it out, but if you think about it yourself and your school, normally the answer is, how do I get more students? I, in turn, then ask a series of questions in order to actually give the person the answer they're truly looking for, and sometimes this is, I could say, a little bit annoying to others because they want the answer from me. And I briefly touched on this last month and many times before in other consulting calls and teleseminars, but I'm going to go into it a little bit more in detail today. Here are a series of questions which I normally ask. I'm going to give them to you so you can truly dig down deep and ask yourself these questions. You may even want to write them down. Number one, the first question is, why did you get involved in the martial arts? Not as a student to train, but I mean in the martial art business. Why are you a school owner and why are you teaching martial arts? The second question is, what is your primary goal by owning a martial arts school or teaching the martial arts? Third question, in a perfect world, not the world of the rich and famous, but in a normal world, what would be the dollar amount that you'd like to live a healthy lifestyle? Number four, what is your specialty? Number five, what do you see yourself doing in the future, and what is your desired exit date? I believe that Michael Gerber calls it the crap-out date, when you're going to be done and you're finished. Before we skip forward, I want you to just ask yourself these questions, but let's go a little deeper. It's my goal to always leave you with something beneficial at the end of our call, or at minimum, stimulate some thought and motivation within you. And if I do that, then I'm doing my job. So number one, the question was, why did you get involved in the martial arts? This is a very serious question. The reason we're doing some soul searching here is not just to find your inner essence or purpose, but it's so you can know what kind of business and lifestyle you desire to produce for yourself and your family. The goal here is to find out really what you're doing. Do you want to teach because you want to carry on the legacy of your style or your teachers? Do you want to protect the world of violence or teach people how to, you know, protect themselves? Do you want to produce fighters? Are you interested in fame and fortune? The answer to these questions are really going to lead you down the path of what shapes your business. For instance, let's say the goal is to make a comfortable living. The living may be $100,000 per year. If so, then you can easily take that number and figure out how you want to attain it. If you have a good, solid business plan, then you can really set your goals to achieve the numbers necessary. For example, $100,000 a year, well, maybe you want to make $25,000 of that doing, seminars. The other $25,000 teaching and gaining tuition throughout the year. The other $25,000 maybe retailing. You know, the list goes on and on. But the goal, if it's not clearly defined, you'll constantly spin your wheels and you won't achieve what's desired. The second question, what is your primary goal by owning a martial arts school or teaching the martial arts? Do you want to teach martial arts because you want to help the community, the inner city kids? Do you want to train soldiers, police officers, etc.? What is your real goal? Giving you an example in my life, my goal was to teach martial arts students of all ages, teaching them how to defend themselves. Since that day, I've evolved, and I much more enjoy teaching people the mental and spiritual aspects and benefits of the martial arts through the physical vehicle of training. So my goal is to have an impact on students in a positive way. I have to be honest, I also want to make a very comfortable living, but when I dig deep down about my goal, I want to be able to enjoy life on my terms. I want to work when I want, how I want, and always create new things. I'm an idea person. So I like making something new and sharing it with others so that they can utilize it and benefit from it, whether it be you people out there or my students or my daughter. And these are the things that I want to achieve in life. So what is it that you want to achieve? Because think about this. If you know what you want to do, you could simply do that and have clear definitions and have laser beam focus to be able to get to those goals and make the living that you want. Number three, in a perfect world, and I said not the world of the rich and famous, not cars, Ferraris, mansions on the hill, but in a normal world, you know, living successful, like the millionaire next door kind of mentality. That book is a great book if you want to read it. But what would be the dollar amount that you would like to live for your healthy lifestyle? So what's your magic number? You need to know this. You know, it's not that you want to just say, I'm going to be a rich and famous. I heard once Brian Tracy talk about his training for salespeople. And he said that if the salesperson stated their goal at the beginning of the year, normally if they were right on the target, worked hard, and goal set, they were able to achieve that financial goal at the end of the year. He said that also if they set their goals higher, they'd achieve higher. But he always asked himself what the question was, why people didn't set goals for a number that, you know, was high but realistic. So we have to say to ourselves, what is the number that we want? What's your magic number? Remember, this really has to do with the cost of living. It all depends on the state you live in, your expenses, the level of debt you have. It also depends on your spouse's income, if there's a two-income household. It also depends on your passive income. And these are the things you should think about. So what's the magic number? Once you determine that, you can look at your numbers and quite simply say, for example, my overhead is $3,000 per month. My income off the $3,000 I need to make is $5,000. That means that you might need to make a total of $12,000 a month, so that you could take home that $5,000. Of course, your net is what you're actually putting in your pocket so that you could pay your bills and save and so on. So let's say, for example, your overhead is $3,000. You want to make $5,000. You should make $12,000. Well, with this scenario, you need to make $10,000 more profit or whatever the magic number is. And now, normally what school owners do is they break it down. Which is a common mistake to do it this way is to break it down in students. Allow me to explain a little further. Normally, the equation goes like this. If I have 100 students at $100, then I'll make $10,000 per month. So in order to make $13,000, I need another 30 students per month. When in reality, that's totally a flawed way of thinking. Most businesses make that mistake not to service their clients, the existing clients, and maximize the dollar amount spent. Let me elaborate a little bit more. There are many areas of income in your school. And in my school, we have a system called the web system. That's that I've designed for taking it to next level clients also. The web system got its name because it basically mimics that of the spider web when drawn on a piece of paper because so many things cross over into each other. And once I explain what we do, you'll see why I say that they cross over. But in our schools, we realize there are 8 levels of income. These are the 8 levels if you want to write them down quickly. Number 1, new students in the form of new signups. Number 2, existing students in the form of renewals. Number 3, upgrades, and this could be either for new or existing students depending on the programs that you have, and hopefully you have upgrade programs. Number 4, special events. This could be anything from seminars, parents' night outs, kick pad things, and so on. Number 5, the upgrade systems that you're going to have within place of the special events. Number 6, pay-in-fulls. And also we call these compression payments. So this could be broken down in 2 if you want, but I call it pay-in-fulls and compression payments. This I urge you to be very careful with. It's very easy to spend money that you actually haven't made as of yet. So when someone pays you in full, that money might go to an ad or it might go into a new kick pad or whatever, you know, but it's spent. The key is to do pay-in-fulls with steady flows of new members. I usually have a percentage that I like to use, and that's 2 out of every 5 signups I can cash out or do a pay-in-full on, so that my school volume is always growing by 3 on that level of 2 to 5. A compression payment is basically when we decide on taking an existing contract or cashing out that last few months to gain a little bit of in-house cash flow. For example, if someone has $200 left on their time, you can get cash up front and let's say give that person 10% off if they wanted to zip their credit card today to pay their balance, and then you could start their renewal sooner paperwork-wise. But anyway, this is a dangerous thing unless you're very, very disciplined. I highly recommend you be very careful with this. But number 6 is our pay-in-fulls and compression payments. Number 7, and this is a separate category away from events, is birthday parties. We keep this as a separate, because this is a viable way of making a good amount of money. After all, there are companies out there, Chuck E. Cheese, you know, Fun Zone. These people make a living on performing birthday parties, period, bar none. So at one point when I had one of my black belts who was very interested and excited about doing parties, he was able to do 45 parties in a year, and he made a profit of about $200 per party. That was about $9,000 that he did at the end of the year, not including all the leads that it generated. And let's say we only signed 20 people up from all those parties. That's another, let's say, $30,000. So separating the parties is very important and treating them as a, you know, a business in themselves. Eight, and the last one of the eight generations, is retail. This is a highly overlooked area. I still talk to my clients, still go and visit schools, and I see a 6x6 square on the wall with a dusty pair of kick pads, a dusty fighting gear set, a dusty T-shirt, and there's no way people are going to buy unless you have stuff there for them hold, to touch, and feel. Unless you're professional at getting a catalog and getting it out to your clients and running sales and tying it into your curriculum. Anyway, this is a whole other teleseminar. I've done teleseminars on this, so they're in the archive. So I would go back to the teleseminar on retail and also read my emails on the Retail Wonderland. This alone could make you between $25,000 and $50,000 a year, depending on your student body. The third question was, what do you teach? Getting back to the topic, your next question should be, what do you specialize in? Really, what are you good at? I have written an article on this title. I think the title was called Maybe You Should Be Better Looking. It was meant to be funny and came directly from the TV show Friends, where my favorite character, Joey Tribbiani, becomes an acting instructor for soap opera students. His first comment when walking in the class introducing himself, of course, after writing his name crooked on the blackboard, he said, "The one thing that you all need to do is become better looking." And I thought that was hysterical because that was his entire method of becoming a good soap opera star. It was looks. But when I thought about this, even though it was hysterical, what I got was that everybody has to specialize in what they're good at. If it's just looks, then they could be used in a TV show. You know, there are so many people that want to become actors, and they think they have to fit a specific role. But there's someone out there that needs to be in every role, whether it be overweight people, short people, tall people. So we have to find out what our niche is that we specialize in. For example, just looking at some of our instructors, we might say that they're not the right person to maybe teaching a 3 or 5-year-old. If they're like 6 foot tall, full beard, deep voice, they might scare a little kid. So they might not have the patience for kids, or you as a school owner might not have the patience or the desire to teach children or possibly adults. Anyway, I talk about my friend Dawn Barnes quite often, and she found her niche, and she's really not looking to do everything, but she specializes in children. So she's really not trying to have a cardio class, an adult class, a self-defense class, a Krav Maga, a mixed martial art class. She's doing what she does best, and she's highly successful for it. So what is it that you want to do? You know, what is your dream teaching scenario? Stop selling out your dream, but start working on that dream. And what do you do well? Who are you as an instructor and a business owner? What is it that you want for your school to look like, feel like, and represent? The fourth question we asked was, what do you see yourself doing in the future? What is your desired exit date? This is a great question. And when I was younger, I wanted to be a rock star. I was in a metal band my entire life, traveled the country touring. I'm sure you couldn't imagine me with long hair, you know, down to my butt, but that was me. I also did a video on MTV, on MTV basement tapes. All throughout that time, I was a martial artist. The goal for me was to be rich and famous, but like I said before, I loved inventing and sharing with others, and I found a great avenue for my creativity in the martial arts that I had much more control over, and that's when I began to teach. Not until I opened my second school as an adult, the first one I was only 16 years old when I ran my first school, that I realized that I wanted to make this a way of life for me. I never even thought, though, that I could make a really good living at it. But I'm learning now that I'm liking more and more of the consulting, teaching my staff, doing public speaking, writing books, and I'm honored just to have released 2 new books, brand new within the last 2 months, 21st Century Ninjutsu, A Warrior's Mindset, and my new Martial Art Business 101, book, which is going to be released at the Super Show. But anyway, I'm not sure if I can make a living out of my consulting and writing right at this time, but I'm comfortable and it's growing. So if I wanted to and I pushed it and pursued it more, maybe I could just do that if that's what I chose to do, or maybe become semi-retired and just write. So what is it that you want to do in the future? When do you want to retire? At what age? Maybe this is too soon to think about, but in the future, What do you think you'd like to do at 45? Do you want to retire to Florida, or do you want to go to Montana? Do you want to have a ranch? You know, what is it that you want to do, and at what age would you like to do it? And where would you like to live? Who would you like to spend your time with? These are the questions that are imperative to building the model of your business and your exit strategy. Well, let's move on with some ready-to-use content that you can save you tons of money, because the topic, of course, was on saving money and what could come better in this trying times where people are complaining about recession and the gas prices are supposed to reach $7 by the end of the year. So here are some common mistakes made continually in any business. Number one, not preparing budgets for your money. Number two, not sticking to the budgets. Number three, not having a plan of action. Again, let's go into a little bit of detail on this, then I'll open up for questions. Not preparing your budget can be extremely dangerous. For example, if you want to build your business, you have to advertise and market to some extent. You may need to run an ad, do a referral program. You know all the things that you could do. But what is your budget for those things? Over what period of time are you going to do those things? What's the consistency ratio? For instance, how many times will you run an ad? How many times will you send out an email? How many times will you do a follow-up phone call? If you haven't planned out this far in advance, then I guarantee you either one of two things are going to happen. One, you're going to start off like firecrackers and fizzle out like a cap gun, or you're going to lose momentum along the way or run out of budget. Remember, an inexpensive campaign, I'll say that again, an inexpensive campaign but a well-organized campaign and planned campaign is better than a poorly planned, highly cost campaign. So you can have a lot of money and dump it in the wrong spot. But if you do something consistently over a period of time, you're going to find that the results are going to build. Of course, it's about branding when it comes to martial arts or any business, which is perfectly and a perfect example is Starbucks. You know, I've never really seen advertising from Starbucks. Yet companies like Dunkin' Donuts and other companies like that advertise all the time. But Starbucks really has not, you know, put an ad that I've seen. I've really never seen a TV commercial or heard a radio ad. Anyway, the goal is that you set up something as simple as, let's say, delivering 2,000 door hangers per week or mailing out 1,000 postcards per month to a selective list. If you do these things, but you do them on a regular basis and you do follow-up, due diligent follow-up, where you're going to call and call those clients up and say, hey, did you receive my postcard? Did you think the offer was interesting? To test and tweak your marketing, you're going to eventually gain momentum. So what is it that you can afford to do, and what are you willing to do? If you want suggestions on low-cost advertising, of course, I could send you some tips. They're also on my site at takingittothenextlevel.com or in my new book. But if you're interested, just email me, and I can also send you my marketing action worksheet, which is a simple sheet to coordinate, and I've done this before in many other teleseminars, and it's still one of the most highly requested. And it's a simple little sheet of paper, nothing extravagant. But just email me at renshi.ninja@aol.com. That's renshi.ninja, linninja@aol.com. Now, every real savvy business owner and entrepreneur takes a time to look at their marketing campaign and set out their budget, but I'm wondering how many people really do it. But before I move on, I just wanted to open up the call real quickly for some questions before I get too far in advance and see if anybody has any questions, comments, or on this specific stuff. If not, Kathy, on the web, maybe we can answer a few of those questions, and then I'll move on to some of the other things that I think we need to do. So can we open it up?
Sure. I just opened up the phone line, so if you're on the telephone and you want to ask a question, go for it.
Anybody have any questions so far on what I was talking about? No one? Okay, anything on the net, Kathy, that we could go over real quick?
And actually, there's a little delay for the people listening on the web. They may not hear what you just said for just like an extra 15, 20 seconds.
Not a problem. Let's wait a few seconds.
There's a hello to you from Tom in Jacksonville so far.
Okay, tell Tom. Hey, Tom, hello to you as well. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I think we just ninja'd them because they're pretty much used to it, you know, towards the end. But
Right. No problem at all. I'm willing. I'm ready to go. I have more stuff. I think that sometimes if I just keep on going, the front part of the topics kind of get a little lost. So, okay, I'll move on, and I'm ready to go. So I'll start again.
Okay.
So every real savvy business owner and entrepreneur normally, that from what I've read, takes a minimum of 8 hours per week to analyze their finances. And what do I mean by this? Simply put, looking at all your expenses, take a deep look at your overspending, the high costs, the rent, and so on. What can you do to lower your overhead? And what does that mean to you? The goal is to lower your overhead, in turn increasing your profit for the long run. For example, somebody may say, well, I want to make more money, but they don't think that, hey, it's really more money is really not about making more, grossing more money, but it could be simply just adding on higher profits by cutting expenses. So we're always thinking back in that scenario, I need to make more money, I need to add on more students, I need to charge more. In reality, it's not always about increasing your prices, but maybe increasing other things. So here we go. The goal is to lower your overhead, in turn increasing your profits in the long run. For example, 1 year I was able to change from my local phone company, Verizon, to cable phone service and save myself $3,500 per year on my phone and internet because I was paying for my internet and I was paying for my telephone. So I saved myself about like 200 and something plus dollars per month. Now I saved $3,500 per year times three schools, three out of the four of my schools, because one of them just didn't have that service in that area. So in essence, I saved myself about $10,500. Think about that. That equals out to about eight or so paying students, right? The real thing was that I still signed up more students anyway, but I saved myself, netting myself, $10,500. And I put that money into my pocket, or I could have put it into marketing. Our ultimate goal is to always do quarterly reviews of things like this. I would check on a regular basis what you're spending your money on and always ask yourself the question, can you save money? And here are a few areas you might want to look into. Number one, insurance plans, your home insurance, personal insurance, your medical insurance, your business insurance, your car insurance, your life insurance and health life insurance. So if you can save a few hundred dollars, then jump on it right away. Normally just taking the time to review the policy or ask your insurance person how they can save you money will result in savings. Here's another example. I called up about my car, and I had said, how can I save money? And they said, well, the policy's at the bottom line, basic price, the lowest we could go. And I said, well, let's look into it a little deeper. Can I raise my deductible? Can I do this? Can I do that? Well, anyway, after looking at it, they found out that my truck was listed, because it's a second vehicle, as a commercial vehicle. And it isn't a commercial vehicle. It's a residential vehicle. And I was only using it a specific amount of miles per year, so I immediately saved myself a ton of money. I forget, and I'm not doing a commercial for Geico, but and I don't use Geico anyway, but anyway, I saved myself some money. So just by asking, and this could be done with your health insurance, it could be done with raising deductibles, and so on. Whatever the case may be, review it and ask others to help review it for you. Other insurance people that you might not be dealing with will be fighting for your business, so they may love to review your policy and try to save you money if possible, if they could secure your business on a new account. Another way, number two, might be your phone companies. This doesn't mean just your business. It could be your home phone, your business phone, your cell phone. And call up and ask it if you're getting the right, if you're using the correct amount of minutes and so on. This is just basic stuff, but you could always look where you can save. Three could be on supplies. If you're a busy school purchasing a large amount of dollars in equipment, gear, fighting gear, shirts, whatever, it'd be fair to call your suppliers and say, hey, can you give me a bigger discount? Even if it's only 5% discount, that could be a huge amount of money at the end of the year. The point is, don't be afraid to ask. Four, how about your landlord? In times like these, the landlord may be willing to alleviate some of the CAM charges or possibly lower your rent. It's not unheard of, especially in times like this, to ask for a reduction in rent. Most people will think this is taboo, mostly because they believe that the landlords are going to get upset with them. But landlords sometimes are sympathetic to the times and to the cause, and they don't want to lose a tenant. So don't feel funny. The worst thing they could do is say no. And now, no doesn't mean no, because this doesn't mean you can't always look at the end of your lease for a better deal somewhere else. So remember, every penny saved goes right into your pocket. Five, payroll. Payroll is a big issue for my company. For other schools that may not have payroll, it might not mean as much. But this is a big one that's overlooked within a small business due to the fact that we treat our employees like family. It's always our goal to review our out-of-pocket costs compared to our profits. I think most school owners have salaried employees, as I do. Sometimes the cost of keeping a salaried employee is far higher than it is to pay by the hour. So if we have an employee and they're making $500 a week and they're working 40 hours, some of that time may be wasted. You may have only 20 hours a week to classes that you teach. So, for example, if you only have 20 classes, 20 hours, and you and you pay $20 per class, and you didn't teach a class yourself, that would only cost you $400 per week. So what is the cost for you to run your classes? And what is your profit? How many people are in those classes? Why is it that many schools are open 20 hours per week, which is normal, 4 hours per night or maybe 3 hours a night and so on per 6 hours, per 6 days, pay far more on payroll than they should? Think about it. Put together a group of people who can help you for free sometimes. Pay less. Maybe you have assistants. Now, I'm not asking you to get unqualified people, but there are certainly qualified people that will probably help you. Maybe they're going to do 1 or 2 hours a week, and they're not even going to want to get paid because it's their way of giving back to the school. So maybe you could get more qualified volunteers to teach and then pay a program manager that will be much more beneficial to your school to help it grow. Of course, this is a personal decision, but most importantly, I would review payroll as well. The topic of not having enough money at the end of the month is simple. When the money runs out, do you still have expenses that need to be paid? If so, the likely choice is either to cut the expenses or to make more money. The cutting of expenses may not be the likely choice because you may have fixed bills that cannot be changed, although I've given you some examples of where you can save this money. And I think that you should concentrate on the income. Be more organized in setting up your plans of attack. What I offer, often referred to as ninja marketing in my schools, what is it that you could do to promote more, to organize more, and be more efficient, in turn making a higher profit and getting a higher average client or student cost? You know, what is your upgrade capability on a special event? You know, maybe you're going to sell the event with the gear, and then it's extra for the gear. Maybe you're going to sell an event with the food included, not included. I mean, I'm just giving you some examples, but what is the upgradability of your event? What's the capability of that event? What are your upgrade goals? For example, I'll give you another idea. What is the average cost of a client? Let's just pretend that, you know, the student's cost is basic membership, $100 per month, and an elite membership could be $125 per month. You have 100 students in your student database. And at present, 80 members are at the $100 rate. You make $8,000. The other 20 at the $125 rate, that totals $2,500. So you're making $10,500. By just having 20 members in the upgraded program, you're making an additional $500 due to the upgrades. That's like having 5 more students, in essence, just by upgrading those 20 people. By upgrading those 20 people, you're able to make as much as 5 students more in income, but you also will be able to do that with less stress, less headaches. So if you did 50% of upgrades on your program to the larger program, then you would increase your income to $11,250, which is $1,250 more per month. That's like having 12 more students. So we have to ask ourselves, so what are we doing to professionally upgrade our clients? What is our systems? It's very easy to understand number crunching. It's easier said than done, too. The question is, what needs to be done, and what is your focus, and how are you going to do it on getting students to upgrade in your school? Do you have systems in place? Do you have something set up so each and every one of those students is put through the same process of the upgrade process? In my schools, the goal is not thousands of students, although we do like to have thousands of students. It's high profit, high quality, and low stress. So what can we do to get those dollars up? What can we do to increase the student value, our client value? How about retail? What if each one of your students purchased only $120 in gear a year? Gear could be T-shirts, jackets, weapons, etc. How about $175 per year by adding in special events, including the gear? Let's just say you raised each client value because they bought one set of a jacket, and they bought one set of gear, and they went to one, you know, sparring class or a parents' night out. Now they're paying $175 extra a year. That's roughly around $17,500 per year at plus. That's like $1,400 to $1,500 per month on top of that original amount of $11,000. That's just like adding on 15 to 20 new students without having to advertise, without having to do anything. Again, it's easier said than done. And this program, this add-on type upgrade mentality and this retailing mentality should be the real goal. And it's my goal, and I want to point that out. The focus is not always on marketing, but really on existing students, the people who are there, the ones who are spending the money and like your program. Not only are you servicing them better, but you're making more money on that client and spending less money on advertising. So what is it you're going to do to have more money at the end of the month to make higher profits? That's the question that I ask you. What is it that we could do within your school to tweak your numbers? For one, lower expenses. Number two, raise your profits. Not necessarily raise your prices. Don't go from $100 a month and just all of a sudden raise your prices. Although, even in tough times, if you raised your prices $5 per month, it's not going to be that impactful. But if you did, that could be a great increase in income per month. But I'm talking about the other end where people who can afford it, that are interested in doing it, will upgrade and take the time to upgrade to a higher level program. Those people that will attend special events, those people that will maybe buy retail if you have it offered for them. The ultimate goal is to service those people fully. And I'm going to continue on in a little further, but now I'd like to open up questions on this and see if anybody has any or if we've gotten any on the internet. So, Kathy, how are we doing on that?
Allie, there is a question on the web.
Okay.
And the question is, with a new studio that's got limited cash flow, it's kind of hard to budget. So what kind of tips can you give them?
Well, it's not hard to budget because budget doesn't mean how much money you have to spend. It means how much money you are going to spend. And again, this is a limited sometimes this is happening quite often in schools, and this is our way of thinking. For example, everyone thinks that a budget is what someone hands you to spend as far as advertising, like an advertising budget. But an advertising budget doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have money to spend it or, you know, lots of money to spend. It could just simply be a door hanger campaign or a postcard campaign, and you hand deliver them. So let's say you do, I don't know, 5,000 color postcards, which could cost you maybe $500 or $600. And you go out every single week delivering 1,000 of those. The cost of it versus the return, hopefully one student is going to come in and join your school out of 5,000, and you've already paid the campaign back and made a profit. So what we need to do is set our goals and say, this is what I can afford at the most minimal level to advertise, and then I'll go out and I'll do the legwork myself or ask people to volunteer and do it for me, but I have to go out and do it. For example, with the way the question was kind of worded, I'm thinking that it's from the where we think of this mentality where we have no money, therefore we can't advertise, therefore we can't grow our business. So the real end result is that we're going to be out of business. So there are a lot of grassroots marketing campaigns that we could do virtually for nothing. You know, sending out press releases, we could call radio stations, we could do free demonstrations, we could go around and create this business relationship, which I call business appreciation on my Taking It to the Next Level site, and we could work with local businesses and ask if we promote them, they promote us. Heck, they might even pay for the flyers because they want to get it out there, and you deliver it. And now you put your flyer on the front, their flyer on the back. They pay for a portion of the advertisement or all the advertisement, and you do the delivery. That's your portion of your obligation to that person. And you could do this with a number of different businesses in your community. I'll give you another example. You know, we give out T-shirts in our school, my school, for free when they first join the school. Then we sell T-shirts afterwards. But imagine being able to give a T-shirt out to every single person who comes in for a trial class or just inquires, and you hand them a T-shirt and say, just for coming in, I'd like to give you this gift. You may ask like yourself and say, well, where am I going to be able to afford all this money for T-shirts? My goal would be to say, pick four or five local businesses in your town that want to do some cross-promotion with you. Tell them after you figure out the cost, because a rough T-shirt cost for a white T-shirt or black T-shirt could be like $4 or $5 printed front and back with your logo on the front, a big logo on the back, and you could wrap those businesses around your logo and put them on the back of the shirt. Now you charge that school owner, the business owner, let's say $150 to run an ad. You have five businesses on the back, you know, or six businesses on the back. You're making yourself $750, $800 on advertising. Of course, my numbers are not accurate. I'm just throwing them at the top of my head. And now you pay for the shirts. It costs you nothing for the shirts. And every new member that walks through your door gets a welcome shirt to say thank you for stopping in the door. The marketing costs nothing. It's a cross-marketing campaign. We just did this with a local pizza parlor. One of my staff members just did this and worked out a deal. And believe it or not, the business is going to pay for the shirts. We're going to pay for a small portion of the printing and so on, and they're going to give them to all their pizza delivery people, all their clerks and counter people and so on, and they're going to wear their shirt with their name on the front and our logo on the back in the pizza parlor. Just get this. People are going to come in and buy pizza and see the Long Island Ninjutsu Center's logo on the back of their shirt. This guy is just highly motivated on helping us grow our business in the community. He likes what we do. He's really excited about helping somebody and mentoring somebody, so we're going to work together. And it's not going to cost us, if anything, cost us anything at all to run this campaign. So my comment, and it's not a, I hope it's not long-winded, although it is a long answer, is to set up your goals, go out and find where you could advertise, and then work on, if you want to use the word budget, as much as you can afford. If not, use out-of-the-box thinking to get people to pay for your advertising. If you want to do a door hanger, front and back of the door hanger, advertise on the back of the door hanger for the local pizza parlor or the local Curves or the local whatever, and have them on the back, you on the front. They get the door hanger delivered. They pay for the printing costs only. Pennies on the dollar, and you get a free door hanger, thousands of free door hangers with your logo on it and all your information. This is just one small way to budget. And if you guys want, you know, almost virtually no-cost marketing ideas, just email me at RenchiLiNinja@AOL.com. Any other questions, Kathy?
Well, you just answered it. Could you say your email address again?
Yeah, RenchiLiNinja@AOL.com. But do we have any others? Or did I answer those as well, or is that the only question?
You actually just answered the other question that was there for right now.
Okay,
maybe
cool.
Someone on the phone lines has a question.
Anybody on the phone have a question? Want to say hello? Who do we have on there today? Anybody out there that I know of? No? They must be people I know because they're quiet, so they must be ninjas. So here we go. Rather than you know, waste your time for the listeners, let's continue on. Now, remembering this whole entire philosophy, my business model, it's the Millionaire Next Door mentality. That book, The Millionaire Next Door, although it was, for me, a little bit tough read, kind of dry read, it was real important. And basically the philosophy of that book was that in order to become a millionaire, you don't necessarily have to make millions of dollars a year. It's really all about what you net and what you save and what goes into your pocket at the end of the week or at the end of the month. For example, and I always like to be truthful and honest, I own millions of dollars in real estate, and really, it doesn't really mean a hill of beans to me at this point in time unless I sell it. Of course, I have equity, and I could borrow against the equity and use that equity and deduct and you know, write off that equity and use that money for other investments and so on. But most importantly, though, owning that real estate is not bringing money into my pocket. The only way that that's going to bring money into my pocket is if those pieces of real estate or that investment creates passive income. Passive income could be done in a number of different ways. You know, I could have it from rentals. I could, in turn have my schools in that building, and those buildings, my schools pay me the rent. But the bottom line is this, is that at the end of the day, we have to see what we're profiting from our school. If I could somehow, let's say, for example, lower my taxes by doing a tax grievance on my buildings, or lower my insurance by, you know, reviewing my insurance with another company, immediately upon saving, if I can save, I'll make a higher profit. So that's what we need to look at in our schools. What could we do to get our clients, individual clients, to spend more and in turn bringing their customer value up? Years ago, I talked about this on a teleseminar, and I asked some people on the conference call, how many people actually know their true customer value? For example, if we were to advertise, we would want to know what that cost of advertising was per client that it brought in. So, for example, if we ran an ad and it cost us $1,000 and the ad then brought us in 10 calls, it would have cost us $100 to make the phone ring per phone call. That's a good ratio, but the question is, how many people did we sign up? If we only signed up 5 people, I don't want to say who cares if the phone rings, because those clients may come back in a later date, but really the ratio is now $200 if we only signed up 500. I mean, only signed up 5. So it costs us $1,000, 10 people called, $100 per phone call, but to sign up people, it costs us $200 per phone call. That's still quite good. Now, of course, if you only signed up two people, of course, the number's going through the roof. In my schools, it's an average. It was an average of about $275 to $325 per phone call. We're higher now. We're at about like $525 to $550 per phone call to get people signed up per advertisement. So if I run an ad, if I, you know, all my combined efforts of marketing is costing me about $550 per phone call, let's say. Now, the question is this. If we could save on that marketing, that in turn will raise the ratio of your you know, your client sale. Now, another thing you may want to ask yourself, too, is what is the student value over the long term? How long do the average students stay in your school? If you sign a student up, what is the average student's length of training before they end up quitting and going away? One statistic that I heard a while ago, and I haven't heard anything recently, was that it's an average of 18 to 24 months a student stays in a martial art program. I think that we have many more people in our schools that stay longer, but they're not the norm. So I would almost go with that ratio, saying that, yeah, it's around 24 months. But I do have some people, for example, I just had a black belt test about a month and a half ago. 24 people tested for their black belt, and they've been with me a minimum of 5 to 8 years. So our ratio is a little higher in that area. But so what is it? Let's say they stay for 24 months. Let's just do it on average, $100 a month times 24 months. That's $2,400 for the student value. Now, remember before we had talked about saying how much do they purchase in retail, how much do they purchase in special events. Let's just say, I don't know, let's just go easy and say it's $100 a year times 2 years. That's another $200. So now your student value is $2,600. This is a low end at only $100 a month, but now we have a $2,600 student value over that period of time. And now let's say that that person refers one person that normally joins in your school. So that client's student value jumps up because of the referral. And let's say we're going to give them a $500 bonus because they recommended somebody, or if they gave us five people, they got a year for free. The student value jumps quite dramatically. So let's say your student value is around $3,000. Wouldn't it behoove you to work harder to maintain that client, to maybe boost up their income, the student value, by a upgrade, or boost up their income by doing more appealable income generators, such as parent night outs? And wouldn't it make more sense to really focus on those clients to get those existing people that are spending money in your school to really spend more money and grow your overall billing at the end of the year? This is really where the focus should be on martial arts schools this day, and I think that a lot of schools are still stuck in that old mentality where they're only about, I need more money, I want to grow my billing, I want to grow my income, how do I get more people? That mentality is a flawed mentality. So I would say, in review, going over those 9 principles of income generation, which in your school is your web system that we call it, is very, very important. And I'll go over them again with you one more time. Number 1 was new students in the form of new signups. Number 2 was existing students in the form of renewals. Number 3 was upgrades, and this could be for either existing or new students. Number 4 was special events. This is seminars, parent night outs, and so on. 5 was, and I'm going to switch it just so it becomes a little bit more, makes a little more sense, was pay-in-fulls and compression payments, which, again, I always urge you to be cautious with this. Number 6 was birthday parties. Number 7 was retail. And number 8 was upgrades retail. Upgrading a client to, like let's say you go to PC Richards and there's a TV and they want to upgrade you to the better TV or a bigger TV or a service contract that's added on with it. These are the things that we need to look at in our schools. And, of course, remember those main initial questions on finding out who you are as a school owner, those 5 questions of why did you get involved in the martial arts? Number 2, what is your primary goal by owning a martial arts school or teaching the martial arts? Number 3, in a perfect world, not the world of the rich and famous, but in a normal world, what would be the dollar amount that you would be comfortable and enjoy a good, healthy lifestyle with? What would be that magic number? Number 4, what is your specialty? You know, like Dawn Barnes or, you know, other guys who know that they're just in MMA school or whatever. And 5, last question is, what do you see yourself doing in the future? Can you see yourself teaching a 3- to 5-year-old little kids class till you're 70? Or do you want to retire out and maybe hire people to do that for you? What is it that you're going to do? What's your desired exit strategy? How are you going to do? What are you going to do with your business? Are you going to sell it to the just one of your head students? Are you going to close it? Are you going to, you know, just, you know, get out of the business? Who knows? Like, that's what you need to start thinking of. In Japanese, we call this, and I've done seminars on this as well, the Maburoshi, which is a vision quest in Japanese. You know, what's your vision? Anyway, we went in, it's 52 minutes of me nonstop talking. I don't know if we have any more questions, Kathy. Do we have any?
Well, there is a question, and the question is, you know, how often should you update your business plan or just kind of like take a look at that to renew those goals?
Well, I certainly would do that every year. But I suggest quarterly to review everything that's going on. I suggest monthly at minimum, weekly at best, to review your finances and see where you're at. You know, quite often out of sight, out of mind. So if we're not doing that on a regular basis, we're really not steering the ship, so to speak. You know, that old example of a pilot who flies an airplane and puts the plane on autopilot has to always recorrect itself, because if it's off just by one degree, it's going to end up landing in a different destination. So just by wind and gravitational pull and all that other stuff, we have to constantly realign ourselves. When we're setting our goals, I suggest doing that on a daily basis. I suggest reviewing your goals on a weekly basis. And, of course, you have big picture goals as well. So the big plan should be done at minimum every single year. But I recommend quarterly. And like I had said before, it's so, so important for us to look at things, because as things change along the way, the whole entire picture may need to be restructured. So, and an example of that might be you may add on 50 new clients, and now you're making that much more money. So now you can in turn maybe add on another staff member, which in turn will then allow you to step out of the picture a little bit further so that you could maybe concentrate on other investments, other ideas, other focus areas in your school. And that is essential when it comes to working on your business, not in your business. And that, you know, that's typical of Rob Kiyosaki. I recommend a lot of my elite consulting clients, it's important for you guys to take a look at the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was a phenomenal book. It changed my life. It just had to view things. And then this is written by Rob Kiyosaki, K-I-O, I believe, S-A-K-I. And he has another book called Cash Flow Quadrants, where I've talked about this, and I'll say it again, where if you took a line on a piece of paper and you drew it from top to bottom and then you divided it in half from left to right, making a plus sign, on the high left corner, the you'd fill in that little box. It would say employed. You'd be working for somebody at that point. Underneath it on the left bottom, it would say self-employed. You basically just jumped yourself out of a job working for someone else and employed yourself. That's why it's called self-employed, where you now work for yourself. The upper right-hand corner is the business owner quadrant, where the quadrant is basically where you work on your business. And get this, I've been working on my business, really, really working on pulling myself out of the mix, working on the systems, try to get making sure that my instructors and my students are dependent on my instructors, not so much on me. I want my program managers not to come to me every second. I want them to work on their issues and problems without having to call me. And we call that passing the monkey. You know, so someone has an issue and they say, hey, Kiyoshi Ali, I'm having an issue. Can you take care of this for me because it's not working out? In turn, I'll say to them, well, I'd love to help you, but I can't take care of it for you. So why don't you do this, this, and this and go back and do it and come and report to me in a week? So I'm giving the monkey back to them. I'm not letting them put that monkey or that burden or that responsibility on my shoulder, which my employees often do. One of my managers, she basically came to me the other day and said, well, I don't really enjoy doing this portion of the job. So expecting for me to just say, okay, well, then I'll do it for you. And I had to say, well, we're going to have to find a way for you to enjoy it, or else we're not going to do it at all, or you're not going to be able to work for me at all. So, again, we're working on the business. We want to be a business owner. We want to manage people, teach people, train people so that they perform a job. And remember, employees are either assets or liabilities. If they're making you money, they're an asset. If they're costing you money or not making you money at all, they're going to be a liability. Even if they're running flatlined, you know, they're a liability. And then the bottom quadrant on the right-hand bottom side, simply put, is investor. So you should be jumping back and forth as much as you can. And this is how my life went. I initially was, I've been self-employed my entire life pretty much since I'm 16. So I was always in the self-employed category. And for years, I jumped back and forth from right left bottom to right top, jumping back from the self-employed to the business owner, self-employed to the business owner. There were glimpses of times where I spent all my time in the business owner category, and there were glimpses of time, more so than not, in the self-employed category. Now I'm focusing on the right-hand side of the quadrant where I'm jumping from the top business owner to the bottom investor. Even in tough times like this, I'm trying to always look at my, try to get better tenants in my buildings, try to increase my profits by lowering my expenses. I mean, heck, I just lowered my expenses by about $4,000 a month by changing my health insurance plan with my deductibles, getting rid of my dumpster company and getting a new dumpster company that was overcharging me, renegotiating loan terms with Chase, and paying off two vehicles that were at the end of their lease and turning them into one other vehicle that was a lot less expensive. So I'm jumping back and forth, always trying to look at it from a big picture point of view, from the high top business owner to the bottom right investor. Anyway, that's really about it for my teleseminar today. I wanted to also remind everybody, and I'll open it up for another question or two if there are any, but I also wanted to remind you that Member Solutions is so generous at offering, of course, through Next Level, a free month of Next Level, taking it to thenextlevel.com. So if there's anybody who's out there that's not on this program, take advantage of it. And there's a program that Member Solutions uses that a lot of people are not aware of called SEP. It's the Client Education Program. I don't know if as many people are aware of it as they should be, where Member Solutions, through your billing volume, literally pays for your education. They pay towards certain programs. They pay towards discounts. So if you're not involved with the SEP program, you should absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, call your representative or call Kathy or whoever and ask them about this program, because in turn it might save you money on your Meyer membership, your NAPMA membership, your Next Level membership, and a host of other things. So that's something you should take advantage of. And then again, I'm going to close this because who knows when you're going to listen to it, whether you're listening to it now with me or you listen to it in the archives. I have my new books that just came out, and I'm so proud of them. One is my martial art book on ninjutsu, but it's been actually I sold a ton of them in Australia, and people are coming back to me telling me that they're actually getting their students to read them because it's really about martial art protocol and the philosophy of traditional martial arts and why we became martial artists. It's called 21st Century Ninjutsu, The Warrior's Mindset. And my newest book, which I'm really proud of, and I owe a lot to Member Solutions because of this book, because they allowed me to use the articles and things that I've written and revamped them and so on. And it's my book called Martial Art Business 101. And the quotes of this thing is, "Hoo-yah, like the Navy SEALs, living the dream." And because we are living our dream of being martial art instructors. Anyway, that's available, and it's going to be released at the Super Show. And I'm sure it's available. It'll become available through Member Solutions. So, Kathy, any last questions?
Well, the last question is, next week at the Super Show, what are you teaching?
My topic, I forget. I think it's really about basically being able to function within our schools at a high profit, like similar to, you know, some of the topics that I talked about here, but really fine-tuning all the things that we do. And I'm going to list out for people on paper so they could take it home with them all the different methods that I use to kind of – that I've used in the past to keep my schools growing on a regular basis and not be affected by a few things. One, competition, and two, the economy, although I'd lie to you if I said that I'm not affected entirely by the economy. But I'm holding my own. And just for example, yesterday in my school we had 9 trial classes in one day. So we're out there getting marketing results, even in New York where it's been pretty tough. So anyway, I hope to see you at the Super Show. And please come by my booth and the Member Solutions booth. And I'd love to be able to talk with you and do a consulting meeting and work with you. And I'll have all the information from the Super Show, a review of it, on an email or a few when I get back. So that's about that's it, awesome. I guess, right, Kathy? No other questions?
One more check. No other questions unless
anybody online want to ask one last one? Going once, twice? Okay. So we're all set, Kathy. Always great having you online. I feel like we have our own, like, little show going. And anyway, I'm really happy about having you guys online with me. I hope that you listen to me in the archives. And thank you, thank you, thank you for allowing me to be a consultant. And I hope that what I share with you, at least in its most minute form, helps your business and helps your life. Have a great day, and I'll see you at the Super Show. Take care. Bye, Kathy.
Thanks. Thanks, Allie. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.